with Parsha Shemos, and generally we try to follow along the Sikha that I've spoken in the year Tafshin Nun Beis 5752, and in that year Parsha Shemos actually fell out on same day as today, Chaf Aleph Teves, which is the day after the Rebbe's Yartzeit, after the Rambam's Yartzeit. And the Rebbe spoke about the Midrash in the beginning of Shemos. We find that the parasha of Shemos begins with Ela Shemos B'nei Yisrael Havoy Mitzrayim. These are the names of the children of Israel who came to Egypt, and then it lists the names. So the Medrash raises the question, why is it necessary once again to repeat those names if they've already been mentioned earlier towards the end of Bereishis? We know the names of Yaakov's children. We mentioned already earlier that they went down to Mitzrayim. So why does it have to repeat again? Well, to say these are the names of the Jewish people, the sons of Yaakov, who came down to Mitzrayim, when it's already been done before. So the Midrash says that the purpose of repeating the names is because each one of the names alludes to the redemption of the Jewish people. The Midrash goes through each one of the names of the Shvatim and explains how each one refers to the redemption of the Jewish people. So the obvious question is, Why is it appropriate here, when we're describing the going down into Egypt, we're saying these are the names of those who came to Egypt, we're describing the going down to Egypt, the beginning of the exile, and as the parasha continues, it talks about how the Egyptians plotted against the Jews and how they enslaved the Jews. So why now, when we're about to describe the beginning of the exile, why do we bring the names of the Shvatim as a lesson to show how each one of them alludes to redemption? One would think that the place for that is at the point of redemption, not when you're discussing the beginning of the exile. According to the Midrash, the reason why the Torah repeats these names is to indicate that each one of these is connected with redemption. But why is this the place when this Parsha is beginning with the discussion of the exile? The question is even stronger when you look at the interpretation that the Midrash gives to the name of Yosef. All the other Shvatim, it gives interpretations which are connected to redemption, but to the redemption from Egypt, from Mitzrayim. On the name of Yosef, it says, the Midrash explains that Yosef also alludes to redemption. But the verse that it brings is a verse that discusses the ultimate redemption. It says, Bayemahu Yosef Adnai Shenes Yodai. The Pasuk says that on that day God will once again extend his hand to take out the Jewish people. Meaning that in addition to the redemption, to the prior redemptions, there will be a final, ultimate redemption. So it's even more puzzling. We're talking about the beginning of the first exile, and the verse is mentioning the name of Yosef, which according to the Midrash alludes to the ultimate redemption. So why at the beginning of the first exile are we talking in terms of the ultimate redemption? The Rebbe also quotes a different Chazal that says that the reason why it brings the names of the Shvatim once again is in order to indicate the reason, the merit with which they were redeemed. But because the Jewish people did not change their names, they kept those same names, their Jewish names, because they kept their names, in merit of that, they were redeemed. As it says, Reuven, the reason why it tells you the names of the ones that went into exile is to tell you that Reuben and Shimon went down, and Reuben and Shimon came out. But with the same names that they went in, that's with the same names they went out, and it was in that merit that they were redeemed. So that was just that explanation. You can understand why it's mentioned here at the beginning of the exile. To tell you that from the beginning of the exile throughout, they maintained their Jewish names. But the other interpretation, which explains that that all of the names here are allusions to redemption, we have to understand why is this the time and place to mention, especially when one of the allusions to redemption actually alludes to the ultimate redemption. The Rebbe says that the lesson from here is that we have a basic misunderstanding of the process of what exile is. Very often, the way we perceive the idea of exile in general, you think in terms of punishment, or even when we learn a Chassidus that the exile is not, its ultimate purpose is not to serve as a punishment. Its ultimate purpose is to go through a process whereby we achieve redemption. And this process is a necessary step in order to achieve redemption. But even with that interpretation, our understanding of exile is as a means to an end. That the exile is the means, and redemption is the end. And redemption is the ultimate purpose. It's just that we have to go through this unpleasantness in order to till we achieve our ultimate goal, our ultimate end. We also know that the redemption from Egypt was not the ultimate. There is an ultimate final redemption. So again, we look at it as a process. But first we go through exile, then we go through partial redemption, then there are further exiles until we reach ultimate redemption. But we see the process, each step of the process, as a means leading up to an end. And obviously, we would prefer if we could do without it. But the truth is that Rebbe says that that's not the true understanding of what exile is. Exile is not, it's not a three-step process. First exile, then partial redemption, and then ultimate redemption. But actually, the exile is a part of the redemption itself. It's not just something that is there in order to have what to be redeemed from. It's not just there as part of the process leading up to redemption. It is part and parcel of redemption itself. And so too, in the stages of redemption. First we have the redemption from Egypt, and then we have the ultimate redemption. It's not that it happens to be a two-step process, that first you have partial redemption, then you have ultimate redemption. But that partial redemption is part of the ultimate redemption itself. What does that mean? What is the difference between if we say that the exile is a process leading up to redemption, that partial redemption is a process leading up to ultimate redemption? And what does it mean when we say that the exile and the partial redemption are parts of the redemption themselves? So in order to understand this, we have to first understand what are these two stages in redemption. We have one stage, which is Yetzias Mitzrayim, redemption from Mitzrayim. Then we have the ultimate redemption. So in the terms of, as Chassidus relates to redemption, as it relates to Avedas Hashem, to one's individual divine service, the way we define exile, Yetzias Mitzrayim, redemption from Egypt, and ultimate redemption, is similarly a three-step process in one's own personal life. Exile is the very existence of the world as we know it. It's called Mitzrayim. It's a world of concealment. It's a world of finite limitations. It's a world that has evil in it, that imposes additional limitations and constraints upon the natural state of affairs, which is that a Jew naturally wants to serve God. So what happens? So each Jew experiences their own individual exile, imposed upon them by the world around them, and even internally, we have concealments. The soul is concealed by the body and the animal soul. We have these foreign desires, and we have a false understanding of reality because God is hidden from us. And this is our own personal Mitzrayim. This is our own personal exile. What does it mean to go out of Mitzrayim? To go out of Mitzrayim, one of the distinctions that we find between the redemption from Mitzrayim and the description of the ultimate redemption is that in the redemption from Mitzrayim, it says that the people ran away. And they left in haste. In the ultimate redemption, it says you will not go in haste. You go slowly, no rush. What's the difference between a redemption in which the people are running away from their oppressor or a redemption in which the people have no reason to run? So the difference is, in the spiritual context of redemption, that when the Jewish people left Egypt, Egypt was still the most powerful country in the world. Even though they had undergone the 10 plagues, Egypt was still, the country had not yet been broken, it was still the most powerful country in the world. So spiritually what that signifies is a person in the early stages of a person's divine service, their evil inclination, their desire for evil is still powerful. And yet, they have the capacity to run away. Egypt is still very powerful. Your own internal desire for evil is still very powerful. But you can get away. You can get away, and the evil should have no power over you, even though it's still extremely powerful. But you still have the power not to give in to the evil. So similarly, the Jewish people, they left Mitzrayim. Egypt was extremely powerful, but the Jewish people were able to get out from under. But they had to run, because there's still a very powerful force to reckon with. So similarly, in one's personal divine service, one could serve God in a state where one's personal evil inclinations and desires are still powerful, but you don't have to give in to them. You could run away. Run away into the study of Torah, into the performance of mitzvahs, into doing good things. You run away from the evil and you throw yourself into positive things. This process of running away from evil in one's own personal avodah is referred to as a skafia. A skafia means resisting the evil, fighting and resisting the evil, not giving in. A person has desires, and evil desires doesn't necessarily, when we use the word evil in modern day English, the word evil means someone that's bad and wants to hurt people. That's pretty much the definition of evil, hurting others, being intolerant, being insensitive. It's not the Jewish definition of evil. The Jewish definition of evil is a desire for anything other than God. A desire for anything other than God or godly endeavor is evil, because anything that's separate from and not connected to God is by definition evil. So a person has evil desires and inclinations, even those that seem relatively harmless. And how does one deal with this? So the process is called a skafia. You have to resist those impulses. You have to resist those desires. And instead, force yourself to be engaged and involved in other activities that would not be your first choice. Learning, davening, doing mitzvahs, those are things that you may not really want to do them, but you force yourself. You force yourself to do those things, and you force yourself not to do the other things which you would want to do, which are your desire. Ultimate redemption, what it means is that you will not have to run away. The reason why in the ultimate redemption there's no one to run away from, because all of the nations will be transformed. There will no longer be any opposing force. So if there's no opposition any longer, and there's nobody trying to oppress it, so there's nothing to run away from. And similarly, in one's spiritual level, the ultimate redemption, which is referred to in Hasidic terminology as ishapcha, self-transformation, one is not fighting the evil impulses, one is not fighting one's evil desire and forcing oneself to do good, but actually one has already been transformed. The evil that's within the person has already been transformed, and doing good is their natural desire. That is what I want to do. I have no desire for evil, and I only have a desire for good, so I'm not fighting with myself. I'm in perfect sync, in perfect harmony. I'm doing exactly the things that I want to do, and not doing the things that I don't want to do. And that is one of the things that we see in the descriptions of the ultimate redemption. It says that at that time, there's Ruach HaTzoma Ava Min Haaretz, that God will remove the spirit of evil from the world. So there will no longer be any evil to fight, to counter, to resist. And therefore, everybody will be completely transformed. So the way we experience reality is that there's a three-step process with a fairly large time lag between the beginning of exile, the end of exile, and between the beginning of redemption, which starts with Yetzias Mitzrayim, and the end of the ultimate redemption. It's been well over 3,300 years since Yetzias Mitzrayim. So obviously, it seems to be a long, protracted process, which takes a great deal of time. But the truth is that we know that originally we were supposed to go straight from Mitzrayim into Eretz Yisrael and experience ultimate redemption. We only made a stop in order to receive the Torah on the way. And after receiving the Torah, we were supposed to go straight to the ultimate redemption. Moshe Rabbeinu was supposed to take us into the land and bring to ultimate redemption. Except for the fact that certain negative events transpired, the sin of the golden calf and so on, and therefore the process ended up taking quite a bit longer. So we see that it's not necessary for the process to be one that takes a lot of time. It then says that this is not just that that an indication that there could be a longer process or a shorter process. It then says that actually these three stages, exile, Yetzias Mitzrayim, redemption from Egypt, or Eschafia, and then ultimate redemption, parallels Tzapka, are actually really all part of one thing. It's not separate stages, although we experience it as separate stages. What is that? If each one of these things were separate stages, then we would no longer, then when a person achieves Yetzias Mitzrayim, there should no longer be an existence of exile. And when a person reaches ultimate redemption, there should no longer be any remnants of Yetzias Mitzrayim. And yet we find a fascinating thing, that the Mishnah in Brachos, we also quote in the Haggadah Shofet, says that Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah said that I am as if I was 70 years old, and I did not merit to find the source for mentioning Yetzias Mitzrayim at night. And until Ben Zoma came along, and Ben Zoma said from the verse, L'man tizker, Asyem tzeisem eretz Mitzrayim kol yemei chayev, in order that you should remember the day of your going out of Egypt all the days of your life. So he says, yemei chayev, yemei is referring to the daytime. That we mention Yetzias Mitzrayim and Kriya Shema in the morning, in the daytime. And kol yemei chayecha, why does it have to say all the days of your life? By adding the word kol, we learn from that that it includes the nights as well. That we mentioned the going out of Egypt, not only in the Kriya Shema in the daytime, but also at night as well. And the Mishnah continues and says, V'chachamim ha'imrim, V'chachamim say, Yimei chayecha ha'elam hazeh, that the days of your life, the day includes day and night. You don't need a special verse to include the nights. The days already indicate that the night is included. So what do we learn from the fact that it says all the days of your life? That we will continue mentioning Yetzias Mitzrayim even in Yemais HaMashiach. So the question is that if Yetzias Mitzrayim is an event that took place in the past, even if it's an important event, even if it's an event that was the beginning of the whole process of redemption, but it's still, once you experience ultimate redemption, so Yetzias Mitzrayim is as if irrelevant. What does Yetzias Mitzrayim have to do with my reality now? I live in a world where there is no existence of evil. Why is it necessary for me to mention the process of overpowering evil when I'm living in a time when there is no existence of evil? So the answer that's brought up to this is because the process, the beginning of the process of redemption, is that Yetzias Mitzrayim opens up the channel, so to speak, for all redemption. The beginning of the process of redemption is the overcoming and overpowering of evil, the going out of Egypt. But still, the question is, what relevance does it have? And therefore, it's necessary to remember. It still deserves a mention. The question is, what relevance does it have to a person who's living in a time of Yemei HaMashiach when evil no longer exists? What is the point of remembering that once upon a time there used to be evil, and God gave us the power to overpower that evil? Now it no longer exists. So the Rebbe explains that the truth is we will have to remember the existence of evil and the overpowering of evil even in the times of Yemei HaMashiach, because the ultimate redemption is meant to be a part of this world, and not, it's not meant to be something which is completely out of this world. What is that? We said that exile is a byproduct of the fact that the world is created in such a way, in a finite, limited way. Because the world is created as a finite, limited existence, therefore, God's presence is concealed. What will happen in the time of the ultimate redemption? God's presence will be revealed. But if God's presence is revealed, we said that in order for the world to exist as a finite, limited existence, God's presence has to be concealed. Because God is infinite. In order for the world to exist as a finite existence, God has to hide his infinity in order for a finite existence to emerge. So if God has to hide his infinity in order for a finite existence to emerge, so what happens when God's infinite presence is revealed? So the world will no longer be a finite existence. That's not true. The truth is, ultimate redemption is that the world is supposed to be a place where, at the very same time that the world continues to be a finite place, a finite, limited, physical world, and yet at the same time contain within it God's infinite revelation. So in other words, how is this process accomplished? The way it's accomplished is that first God hides his presence in order to allow for the existence of a finite, limited world. That creates a situation that we know of as exile. Then we have the process where we have to begin fighting and overcoming those limitations that are imposed by the world. By fighting and overcoming those limitations that are imposed by the world, we make it possible for God's presence to be revealed in the world as the world exists. In order to have the two realities coexisting at the same time, infinite revelation in a finite world, we have to go through the process of first fighting and overcoming the limitations and the finite nature of the world. By overcoming those limitations and restraints, we make it possible that the two realities should coexist. So it comes out that really, we're not talking about, so in our world it plays out as a three-step process. First is the concealment. Then there is fighting the concealment. And then we're ready for ultimate revelation, where we can have revelation and finite existence coexist. But from God's perspective of reality, it's actually all one thing. It's not, the whole purpose of the concealment is, you know, that there should be infinite revelation in a finite world. The whole purpose of the process of overcoming concealment is in order that there should be infinite revelation in a finite world. And the ultimate is when there actually is infinite revelation in a finite world. So there's no point that we say that this is a means to an end. In the way it plays out in our world, it's a process, and the process takes time, and each one seems to lead to the other. But from God's perspective, it's all one thing. It's all creating infinite revelation in a finite way. So it comes out that even that the true perspective on exile is, the true perspective on exile is that exile exists in order that there should be infinite revelation in a finite world. Exile only exists for infinite revelation in a finite world. The process of fighting and resisting and overcoming evil and overcoming the darkness and overcoming one's natural limitations, that only exists in order that there should be infinite revelation in a finite world. So, when we actually reach the point of Yemais HaMashiach, when we actually reach the point where we experience infinite revelation in a finite world, so it's still necessary to remember, we're not looking back and remembering the steps of the process. We're seeing how everything that ever happened and everything that ever existed, what Yetzias Mitzrayim does is it starts to reveal that everything that ever existed all along only existed for the sake of infinite revelation in the finite world. It only existed for the sake of ultimate redemption. There never was anything else. It wasn't that, oops, we're stuck. What are we going to do? We're in a finite world and godliness is concealed and evil is powerful. Uh-oh, what are we going to do? You know what? We need to have a redemption. To us it played out as a story that took place in stages, which took a very long time. But from the perspective of true reality, that's what it was all along. There never was anything else. It was all about the same thing all along. Infinite revelation in a finite world. So what does that help us? Very nice. From God's perspective, there never was anything else. But from our perspective, we did experience the process of exile. Then we experienced the process of going out of Mitzrayim. Then we get to experience the process of ultimate redemption. What does it help us to know that really the whole thing all along was just one big redemption? The answer is, in order that we can actually, within the darkness, within the world that from our perspective appears to be a dark world, a world of exile, a world of concealment, a world of evil, we should be, if we can perceive that the world itself really is only about infinite revelation in the finite world, then the concealment has no power over it. The only reason the concealment has any power over us is because we think it's real. We think that there is an actual state of concealment. And who knows? When will we ever achieve redemption? We see redemption as an event in the future. But if we see that all of reality is only about redemption, there never was anything else, then the concealment has no power over us, and we can experience redemption within the concealment. We can experience personal redemption within the concealment, operating in a finite world. We don't need to be flying in the air and living completely out of the boundaries of nature. We could be living within the world, within nature, operating in a natural world in a natural way, and yet see how all of those things are actually parts of redemption. The Gashmius, there's in the business world, the concept of business is that the Siddur brings the pasuk, Yesh Rafazer Benoisef Oit. You have to spend, there's a person who spends a lot of money, throws his money around in order to invest it. So he empties himself out. Sometimes people go into debt in order to invest. But what's the point of the investment? In order to have more money. So a person invests in the stock market. He studies the stock market for years. He thinks he's an expert on the stock market. And he invests in the stock market. And you can invest in the stock market. You can invest on margins. You don't even you take loans. So the person has big debts. And he's hoping and praying that his investments will pay off. But he has no guarantee. He has no guarantee that his investment is going to pay off. So as he's sitting every day and opening the paper to see how his stocks are doing, he's going through hell. He's going through terrible worry and agony. Maybe it won't work out. But what about somebody who has an insider tip? He knows for a fact that he knows, he saw the company profit report, and he knows the stock is going up. He knows it for a fact. No question. Now, it may not be legal, but so this person goes out and buys with every penny he has, takes all the money he has, borrows all the money he can get, and goes out and buys the stock. Because he knows for a fact that it's going to go up. The public doesn't know yet, he knows in advance. So he's in the same debt. He has no money. He has tremendous debts. And he's laughing. He's happy. It didn't happen yet. The stock didn't go up yet. But he's still happy. He's still excited. Why? He's broke. He's broke. He has debts. And he's excited. Because he knows that he made it. He knows he has it already. He doesn't experience. So one person is living in a state of fear and anguish and agony and he's broke and he's nervous and he's miserable, he's unhappy. The other person is just as broke and he's flying, he's happy, he's dancing, he's living the good life because he knows as soon as the report comes out, he sees his money back many times over. So to him, there was never, to him all along, the whole process all along was not a difficult and painful process. All along, even at the stage when he was broke and penniless and in debt, he didn't experience it that way. He didn't feel like he's broke and penniless and debt. He felt like he was begging money. Because that's all there ever, he never had a concern that maybe it's not going to work out. The other person who doesn't know for sure, to him, he sees his situation is very real. He might end up broke and penniless and deep in debt for the rest of his life. He doesn't know for sure that he's ever going to get out of this. If his picks are right, he'll do very well. If not, he may end up stuck in that situation. with no end. So the same thing is true of how we relate to the exile. If we relate to the, but why is this person doing it? If the person is not sure, why is he doing it? He has no choice. If you want to make money, you have to take a risk. You have to take certain risks. It's part of the process of trying to make money. So he does it, as painful and as difficult as it is, he does it because he hopes to make the money. But that's part of the process of trying to get to your ultimate goal. You have to go through a difficult time. But so it comes out that one person, his to him the darkness is very real. But it's no choice, something you have to go through in order to get to the light. To the other person, you never experienced darkness in the first place. All along, he knows for sure that he's going to make it. So the same thing is how we relate to exile. Do we relate to exile as something that darkness is very real? It's very real. A lot of limitations and constraints, a lot of pain, a lot of suffering, a lot of difficulty, a lot of challenge. The darkness is very real. But okay, we believe that ultimately in the end, we don't know when exactly, we don't know what, but ultimately in the end it's all going to work out for the best. And it's that hope and belief that keeps us going. That's one way of looking at the exile. Whatever says is another way of looking at it. That it's an investment. It's a sure thing. All it is it's just, to us it plays out as a process. To the rest of the world it looks like this guy, that we're broke and we're in debt and we're first going to make the money later, but the truth is it's a short thing. The whole thing all along is only about redemption and ultimate revelation. That's what it's been about all along, and that's what it's about throughout the whole process. So when a person lives that way, when a person sees exile that way, so they're able to experience redemption in exile. You don't need to go out of exile in order to experience redemption. You're able to experience redemption in exile itself. So the Rebbe says, so what happened? So until now, Rebbe Elazar ben Azariah says, till now, we mentioned Yetzias Mitzrayim by day. Yetzias Mitzrayim by day means that after the Jews went out of Egypt, and they went out to Israel, and there was a Beis HaMikdash, in times when things are good. So we understand that you remember Yetzias Mitzrayim. You remember the fact that we were able to overcome and overpower evil. So that we understand. The question is, what about at night? What about when things are dark and things are gloomy and we're in exile again? What's the point of remembering the Tzius Mitzrayim? Right now, it's very nice that we once went out of exile. Now we're back in again. And the answer is no. So Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah came along and was mechadesh that maskirim Tzius Mitzrayim b'leila. That even in the darkness you have to remember Yetzias Mitzrayim. Even in the darkness you have to remember that the darkness is only there in order for it to be subdued and overcome. It's not there, it has no power onto itself. It's only there in order to facilitate redemption. And the Chachamim had told you, Mechayech Elohim Yimei HaMashiach, that Yetzias Mitzrayim is necessary to mention even by night, because it's the process of Yetzias Mitzrayim of being able to see the light within the darkness that's going to be necessary even in the time of ultimate redemption, because even in the time of ultimate redemption the point is that the revelation should be within the world, within the finite limited world, not something that's out of this world. The whole point of the whole process was that the ultimate revelation should be within the finite limited world, within the constraints of nature, not by breaking nature, but that revelation should take place within nature itself. And therefore it's necessary to mention Yetzias Mitzrayim even in Yimei HaMashiach. Obviously the main thing will be ultimate redemption, and Yetzias Mitzrayim will be secondary, but it's still necessary to understand the process of Yetzias Mitzrayim in order to appreciate the point of ultimate redemption, that the point is that it should be within the world. What is this in the terminology of Avodas Hashem? the terminology of Avedis Hashem. So there's personal exile, then there's the process of eskafia, of one's own personal struggle with evil, overcoming evil, and forcing oneself to do good. And then there's ishap, the ultimate redemption is total transformation. So here again, the Rebbe explains that the exile is part of the process of redemption. The process of redemption begins with eskafia. It ends with ishapka, total transformation. But even at the time of total transformation, it'll be necessary to remember that there was a time when there was an existence of evil and we overpowered, and the struggles that we had with evil to overpower evil. Or in other terminology, that even when a person achieves a state that in Chassidus we have a term, eskafia hamevi lidei eshapka. There is a eskafia that leads to, there's a eskafia, struggling with the evil, and then there's a eskafia hamevi lidei eshapka. The eskafia that brings, that's a step in the process that leads to eshapka, to total transformation. But in addition, there's a concept, which is that when a person achieves a state of eshapka, it's still necessary to hold on to the mila, to the advantage of eskafia. There's a certain mila and advantage of eskafia which a person wants to hold on to even after he achieves a state of eshapka. I got time to go into now, discuss more at length in this show Thursday morning, but just there's a story with the Friedrich Rebbe that he once asked one of the Bachram who was helping him to bring him a glass of hot tea. So the Bachram brought the Friedrich Rebbe a glass of hot tea. When he came in a few hours later to the Friedrich Rebbe's room, he saw that the tea is still sitting on the table and it's cold. So he said to the Friedrich Rebbe, "Varei kvar ovad." What does it mean, "Varei kvar ovad"? The Rebbe in Tanya explains the difference between a Beinoni and a Tzaddik, that a Beinoni is called an oved, somebody who is still working. He's still working on himself, he still has to fight and struggle with evil. A tzaddik is called an eved. An eved is a servant. The Alter Rebbe says he's called an eved because harei kvar ovad. He already worked on himself to the point that he no longer has to fight and struggle with the evil. So he saw that. He brought the Friedrich Rebbe a glass of tea, and the Friedrich Rebbe didn't drink it. So he said to the Friedrich Rebbe, "Harei kvar ovad." Friedrich Rebbe is a Rebbe, is a tzaddik. So you already did it. Well, you don't, what do you have to do with a eskafia? If you wanted a glass, obviously if you ask for a glass of tea, it's because that's what God wants. So why do you have to, it's not because you had a selfish desire for it. So if you ask for the glass of tea, so why not drink it? No reason not to drink it. For a person who has selfish desires, so there's a reason not to drink it, because you don't want to give in to your selfish desire. But a person who's a tzaddik and has no selfish desires, if you ask for a glass of tea, obviously it was necessary. So why are you not drinking? But he asked it in those three words, "Varei kvar ovad." So the Friedrich Rebbe answered, "Zei darf ich will." The Friedrich Rebbe says, they have to do it. Everybody else has to work on themselves, has to learn to overcome their selfish desires. He says, "I feel like doing it. I don't have to. I did it already. I'm finished. That part of my job is finished already. It's not necessary for me to, but I want to." So you see that there's still such a thing that even after a person has achieved the level of his hapcha, is completely transformed, and there's no evil, and their most natural desire is for godliness and for good. There's absolutely no desire for evil. Yet there's still such a thing that even at such a time, to hold on to the advantage of eskafia. that even though he said he doesn't need to, it's not necessary for him to do it anymore, still he wants to. And we have to understand the Mitzvah Shem. We'll have a chance Thursday to go into the significance of what this means in our personal avodah, the process of exile, redemption, ultimate redemption, and how we can experience ultimate redemption even in the exile, and experience the advantages of exile even in ultimate redemption.